7 years can feel like an eternity. You know, I was actually thinking about this over the weekend, getting ready to do this segment. And 7 years ago, I was a different person. 7 years ago, I had different beliefs. I had different understandings. I had a radically different skill set. And yet 7 years is how long you and I have been in a constant state of a public health emergency as the anniversary comes and goes of BC declaring an emergency over the toxic drug crisis. We have seen any number of new measures implemented. We have seen any number of pleas for various levels of government, including the federal government, to do more. We have seen concession after concession after concession, including but not limited to a recent pilot project that is seeing the outright decriminalization of possession of small amounts of some substances for personal use, I should add. It's a narrow exemption. It's not, you know, across the board, to try to stop people from dying. And unfortunately, despite our best efforts, with some exceptions, the numbers have either kept on going higher or they have held the line, with far too many people losing their lives every single day compared to how things were 7 years ago when we sounded the alarm. Here to talk more about this, what we have learned over this period of time and what we can expect to happen next, we're joined by Cora DeBeck, Associate Professor, SFU School of Public Policy, also a research scientist with the BC Center on Substance Use. Professor, thank you so much for your time. Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
7 years. How has it been that long?
It's absolutely devastating, and I wanted to express my condolences to so many of your listeners that I know will have been very personally touched and by this crisis and have lost loved ones. It's just devastating.
Is it true that we recently set yet another monthly record for the number of overdose-related deaths?
Yeah, it's, you know, we've been putting in many interventions, trying many new innovations, and what we see is that it just continues to not be enough. And you know, we would just really, it's mind blowing how the numbers just continue at this rate.
Do we understand why they're getting so much worse? Is it that these external factors have sort of intensified at the same time we're enacting policies that should have a positive benefit, so the benefit is overwhelmed? Or help us understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from my perspective, you know, we have done an amazing amount of innovation in this area when we look to other settings. The type of work that peers and people who use drugs are doing on the front lines, the number of overdoses that they have reversed. We have an extraordinary amount of peer-led overdose prevention sites. I believe we have over 40 now. Naloxone distribution has been ramped up. We have drug testing. As you were noting, we have a pilot around decriminalizing personal possession. But really, from what we see from the coroner's report, is the supply of drugs is what is absolutely toxic and killing people. And so until we are able to very seriously address the supply of drugs, we will not see a significant decline in overdoses, unfortunately.
We talk about the regulation of safe supply and the increased provision of safe supply. I find that actually defining what safe supply does and does not mean gets complicated depending on who I talk to. What do we mean when we say safe supply?
Yeah, that's a great question. And safe supply, essentially, I think as the province has, in my view, as the province has been rolling it out, is very much a prescriber-based model, so requiring someone to prescribe some type of regulated drug, something that's of known quantity and potency. The challenge with that model of safe supply is that the type of substances that are available to people is what we see in our research and data, and what people in the community say. It's not what they need and what they want, and so it's incredibly limited tool. It's also accessibility-wise is quite challenging in terms of finding a prescriber who is able to take that on and do that with a patient. And so safe supply in terms of a medically prescribed model is one aspect or one type of safe supply. But there's other types of models and interventions, things like that people who use drugs have been calling for, things like dispensary models or compassion club type models. So other mechanisms where people who use drugs can ensure that the drugs that they're getting are of known quantity and purity.
One of the issues that we've found, and I find it very difficult to hold these two ideas in my head, so I like asking experts how they do it, is that on one hand, we have the phenomenon of the opioid crisis being fueled by pharmaceutical interests and the phenomenon of overprescribing, and there's litigation involved in that, especially in American courts in terms of the jurisdiction. We have similar litigation here in Canada because we recognize that making these pure, clean substances too available causes harm. How do we increase the availability of these pure known quantity substances without accidentally causing the same sorts of problems with new addictions that we saw in terms of overprescription of opioids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there are really different contexts in terms of how opioid crises and the overdose crisis here has emerged compared to other settings. And so what we've seen in our research and data is that the pathways into whether it be opioid dependence does happen for some people through the medical system. But for many people, that is not the case. And in our research and studies with people who use drugs in Vancouver, that is predominantly not the case. But I think when we draw lessons from other types of substance use and how we've regulated use of things like tobacco and alcohol, we can draw some parallels and lessons there with respect to what I would see in tobacco is a quite successful public health approach where through tight regulations around access and controlling costs and various things, public health has been quite effective in reducing the harms and the overall use of tobacco. Whereas something like alcohol that has allowed a lot of promotion, advertising, glorification has resulted in more consumption and overall more harm. So I think when it comes to other aspects of substance use, we can really draw some of those lessons in terms of how we can have an effective public health approach to regulation. So that does not mean that it's drugs are advertised and pushed and made available to absolutely everybody. There are under a public health regulatory approach a lot more tools to control use. And right now, in the context of prohibition and criminalization, we really have very little tools in our toolbox.
Cora DeBeck is our guest, Associate Professor, Simon Fraser University School of Public Policy, also a research scientist at the BC Center on Substance Use. 7 years in a public health emergency due to the opioid poisoning crisis, and at this point, no end in sight. Professor, thank you for coming on and helping us better understand this issue. Any final thoughts for now?
Thank you. Just really urging listeners to think about when we're approaching drug policy, we need to do things radically different, and criminalization and prohibition have just been an absolute failure.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye now. Here we go, folks. A difficult subject made ever more difficult by the amount of time that the emergency has dragged on and the seeming lack of the desperate improvement so many of us have prayed for, literally and figuratively, I'm sure. And again, our condolences to those out there who have lost loved ones because they exist right here in this community. And it's a tragedy that no family should ever have to endure. No parent should ever have to bury their child for any reason, much less something that's preventable.